With that, in alignment with our really focused approach on reducing those restrictive procedures and just improving our programming for students that have, you know, emotional behavioral disorders or autism, is we've done some program realignment, and we started that process 2 years ago. And so, as being part of a cooperative and Monticello being our fiscal host site, we kind of had programs that were spread amongst different buildings.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. We've had really remarkable relationships with those buildings. However, it didn't allow us to really maximize our resources, right, in the most efficient manner. And so we did some shifting of and trying to get those programs not only aligned in like their approaches, but also their proximity. And that allowed us to, instead of having programs that are maybe a little bit of on an island, that really teaming those programs.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is John Weekly. John is the Director of Special Education at the Sherburn Northern Rite Special Education Cooperative, and their offices are located in Monticello, Minnesota. And a special note, John and I both grew up in Grand Island, Nebraska, so we have a very special connection, and I am just absolutely thrilled to have you on today, John.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about what's going on in your world in Monticello.
Yeah, absolutely. So as the director of the Sherburn Northern Rite Special Education Cooperative, we support the communities of Monticello, Becker, and Big Lake with all their special education needs. We provide specialized services, particularly in the areas of providing school psychologists, occupational therapists, physical therapists, speech, DHH, so deaf and hard of hearing, vision, all of those specialized services that communities need. And we work highly collaboratively with the communities of Becker, Big Lake, and Monticello. We service about 2,000, probably about 2,100 special education students between those three districts. And we also offer specialized programs such as level four, setting four programs for students with either autism with some behavioral components, developmental cognitive disabilities, as well as emotional and behavioral disorders. And we're constantly trying to refine our craft. We have amazing staff and a wonderful community. And I'm excited to talk to you about it today.
Awesome. Awesome. So do you guys also do BCBA or social work at all as well?
Yes.
Is that
yes,
part
absolutely.
Of it?
Absolutely. We have social workers in each of our school buildings. Mm-hmm. And we have two board certified behavior analysts that support the three member districts.
Right.
One of them supports the communities of Becker and Big Lake. And then one of them supports Monticello as well as our cooperative programs.
So explain to our audience why cooperatives exist. I don't know that every state has something, but help them to understand the purpose of a cooperative and why they're so essential.
Yeah, so school districts maybe that are smaller and that can't support maybe a full allocation of, for example, a deaf of hard of hearing teacher, it allows the districts to collaborate and share those resources, and allows for the cooperative to provide, you know, the essential staff development in those areas that kind of serves as a force multiplier for those smaller districts. And the key is having really good collaboration and communication when you're sharing resources, obviously.
Right.
But the nature of cooperatives is really just to provide, fill those gaps that maybe a smaller district can't provide.
Right, right. Absolutely. And certainly, I know a long time ago, if you had a child who was deaf or hard of hearing, they ended up on a bus forever, or they ended up in a specialized school. Not that there's anything, I don't have anything against any of those specialized schools. I don't like the bus ride forever, but you're providing a need and making a connection that helps those kids that in a way that we wouldn't, they would never otherwise have, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'd like to take a moment just to give a quick shout out, because I was talking about the collaboration. We have incredible collaboration between, you know, our superintendents within those three districts, Tim Truenbeck in Big Lake, Jeremy Schmidt in Becker, and Eric Olson within Monticello, but as well as I have seven special education coordinators that are assigned, you know, district specific duties, but as well cooperative duties. So they may be supervising a building, let's say, for example, the middle school in Big Lake, but they also have some cooperative programs and staff that they supervise. So they kind of have to keep an eye on both the Big Lake initiatives as well as those cooperative wide initiatives. And the collaboration right now is fantastic. I have to throw in the special education teachers as well as the regular education teachers. When you have strong collaboration between three districts, it allows us to really service this community and allows some flexibility for families with school choice, for example, able to align, you know, their schedules with maybe one district, but we have some pretty significant commonalities between those districts as we try to align our approaches.
Nice, nice. And when schools work together, the kids win, right?
Yeah, it's a real force multiplier for sure.
It allows us
to get really creative as well, because you know, we're trying to broaden that even beyond special education. So let's say, for example, that Becker maybe is offering a course that Monticello isn't. We're really looking at opportunities for students to cross between the districts with a little bit more free flow. And that takes a lot of planning and collaboration, but it just makes those experiences for those students even better.
Yeah. So if there's a specialized instruction person that you have at one, but not at the other, all three benefit from that hire. That's amazing. And that,
absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. So what would you say are your biggest challenges right now? I know everybody's got them. So, yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's going really great, but, you know, I'd love to hear how you're handling those as well.
Absolutely. Inherently with specialized programs, you're working with students with some unique needs. And I wouldn't say it's a common problem across the United States, is just really supporting those students with emotional behavioral disorders or maybe a trauma background. And we're really working hard right now to align, you know, our approaches with best practices in regards to trauma-informed care. And we've made some great headway, but it's a constant work in progress. We have, you know, staff come and go, and we have, you know, high turnover in some of those positions where you're working with students that maybe have that potential to be more dysregulated. Mm-hmm. And one of the successes we've had is that we've been able to really significantly reduce the amount of restrictive physical procedures that we've had to have with students when they're dysregulated. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly because we've been really working hard on mindset and really looking at behavior as communication and what are they trying to communicate, as opposed to looking at, you know, what's wrong with this student. We look at more of a strength-based approach and what they're trying to communicate. And we've adopted a couple different initiatives over the last couple of years that have really brought our numbers down. I was just looking at the numbers, you know, even three years ago, we've reduced our restrictive procedures almost 80% in our level four programs. It's twofold. It's probably threefold, but it's really staff mindset and that healthy culture within those buildings, and have some phenomenal leaders that have kind of led the charge on mindset, but also really using best practices. And we adopted Handle with Care a while ago. Handle with Care is really an approach that is preventative, and restrictive procedures are that last resort. And that's a lot of mindset coaching with staff. It's scary when a student is dysregulated,
right?
But really the goal is to prevent it, first of all.
Right.
Where that student is on, you know, we use the term anxiety curve, but recognizing where they are on the anxiety curve and matching our approach to where they are. The whole goal is to get their mind ready to learn. So we try to de-escalate verbally. There are instances that the last resort is imminent harm. And so we do have to respond using Handle with Care procedures for that. But I'm so excited that our numbers are just going down with that, because we've also adopted some other approaches. And one of them is called Ukeru. I don't know if you're familiar with Ukeru, but Ukeru is really an approach that meets the needs of those trauma students with just a real calm approach. And it's hands off, and a lot of verbal de-escalation, a lot of normalizing of just the conversations around triggers with students, as well as just adapting our approach of how we respond to those circumstances. And that has also significantly helped our level four programs in regards to reducing those incidences of restrictive procedures. So making some good headway in that regard. And one of the challenges with that, though, is we do have high turnover in staff, and so you're constantly doing that
training.
Staff development and training, a lot of analysis of data in regards to trying to determine maybe what the cause of that behavior is, what was the precursor to that behavior,
right?
Just having discussions, and so adds time to people's plates, and but without doing that work, right?
Yeah.
Without getting a kid's mind ready to learn, you're not able to move into those other goals and objectives, whether it's literacy, math instruction or other. So we prioritize, particularly in our level four programs, just getting that student's mind in a calm spot that they can learn. Because sometimes they come in an escalated state. So you spend some time really working to get them calmed down. And if you don't do that, you're not going to meet the goal anyway. So,
Yeah, it's just going to get worse, and it's going to, you know, you can either invest the time on the front end or deal with the consequences on the back end, right? Yeah. And either way, they're a time suck, you know, just is part of it. It's just part of, but I'd rather do the time suck now, put the work in now, and know that, that the child's going to have a better outcome, and so are you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. With that, in alignment with our really focused approach on reducing those restrictive procedures and just improving our programming for students that have, you know, emotional behavioral disorders or autism, is we've done some program realignment, and we started that process 2 years ago. And so, as being part of a cooperative and Monticello being our fiscal host site, we kind of had programs that were spread amongst different buildings. It's great. We've had really remarkable relationships with those buildings. However, it didn't allow us to really maximize our resources, right, in the most efficient manner. And so we did some shifting of and trying to get those programs not only aligned in like their approaches, but also their proximity. And that allowed us to, instead of having programs that are maybe a little bit of on an island, that really teaming those programs. So if they're close together in proximity, and we actually shifted some into the same building, it allows for, you know, our crisis support teams to respond quicker. Mm-hmm. It allows for less staff burnout because you're not alone, you know, maybe working with a tough student. You can tag people in, tag people out, do some of those really creative programming things. And then also really working on the staff climate, because it does create a community. And that's one of the most exciting things that I saw last year, was just that renewed excitement of our staff members that were working, particularly in our level. We have a program called Pathways, and it has combination of programs in it, including emotional behavioral disorders, some programming for autism, programming for development of cognitive delays. But just seeing them kind of unite as a team, a broader team, and they do a lot of fun culture things, and that trickles down to the kids.
Right.
When staff are happy and are working as a team, it does trickle down to the students. And so those are things that I'm proud of. We're also doing some pretty significant work in regard to our transition programming within the cooperative, and some realignment, and just excited about those possibilities. You know, coming out of COVID, the COVID time period, there was less opportunities for students to get out and work in the work out in the community. And so those doors are opening up again, and we're establishing good partnerships with communities of Becker, Big Lake, and Monticello. And I'm really proud of how they do support our students, our young adults that are maybe have some goal areas that they're still working on past their classes graduation. Minnesota recently changed, students can stay in the transition programming up to their birthday of age 22. And historically it had been 18 to 21.
So
it gives us more time with those students. And the state of Minnesota itself is doing some significant work in just the area of transition programming for young adults with disabilities. And we're just trying to align our approaches with the state's recommendations, partner and collaborate with all these outside agencies as much as we can. And doing some realignment of just similar to what we did with the level four programs. We had transition programs that were kind of on islands, and we're reprogramming to bring those closer together so that we can operate like a true tiered level of support for those transition programs, so that a student that maybe initially starts off in our C5 program, or C5 is the name of the program. If they started on that program, that's for the students that maybe have the lowest level of independence.
Right.
But we don't want them to spend their entire transition years in that program. We want them to operate out of that least restrictive environment. And so by realigning our programs, we're allowed to have a full tiered system where, as they become more independent, they can move through programs a little bit more free flowing. And so I'm super excited about that aspect of it. Hard challenges, though, and we're luckily we were fortunate enough to maybe address this. And we have Minnesota provided the state with an opportunity to apply for a pipeline grant.
Okay.
And the goal of that was to support paraprofessionals with obtaining special education licensure.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that's happening, and Michigan's doing the same thing. That's really exciting. It's really some exciting stuff because, yeah. Oh, go ahead. Tell us about it. I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah. So it's served us well. So we applied for the grant and obtained it, and we're able to start off with eight candidates that are currently working towards their licensure. A couple of them already completed because they had already started some programming.
Nice.
And that's allowed us to fill some critical positions in special education in our member districts. With those eight, we kind of divided it up, two per educational unit. So two for Becker, two for Big Lake, two for Monticello, two for our cooperative. And recently, since some of them had already started programming, we could use some of the remaining funds and we're able to expand that to some additional staff members. And I'm kind of in the process of communicating to some of them that had applied before that now we can provide them with some scholarship. And mm-hmm. we're hoping to be able to expand that to even further through some creative accounting with it to get even more in there. But that's something like, you know, the shortages of special education staffs is real.
Are you struggling to keep speech therapy fully staffed or tired of high turnover? You're not alone. At Lighthouse Therapy, our speech language pathologists are seasoned professionals, and most of them have over 16 years of school-based experience. They're not just qualified, they're consistent, relational, and results-driven. We offer three flexible delivery models: virtual therapy, hybrid therapy, and in-person therapy. It's speech therapy done right for you and your students. Learn more at lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter-together. Yeah, it's very real. Yeah, very, very real. Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
I know you and I have talked about the shortages of speech providers.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Just want to put a plug out there. It's a very rewarding field, special education mm-hmm. speech. Please, please, please consider it. We need you. There's a lot of good job security, but it's one of the most rewarding fields, careers that you can ever encounter. So,
and absolutely, absolutely. I've been doing this show. I think you're like number 87 of people that I've talked to, but these are people, you and I, and the people that are in there, that are making decisions, that are doing this stuff day to day. These are people that love what they do, love the kids. You know, we put the kids and sometimes in front of ourselves to our own detriment sometimes, you know, but to also just the wins that you see, and you don't always see them right away. You know, it's a day to day. You're loving on those kids. You're doing what you need to do. But boy, you know, they get out there and they're successful and it's beautiful when they come back, you know, when they come back and you see the work that you've done, and there's nothing like it. There's nothing like changing the life of another human being and making their life better.
Absolutely. I would say, it's also important, you know, a lot of people, maybe it's a confidence issue. They don't feel like they're perfect enough to work with kids.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that's not the case, right?
Yeah.
Education, we need you. If you're interested in working with kids, we need you. And I know that I think I talked with you a little bit before we started talking today, that there's probably some teachers within my high school that I graduated from that would be really surprised that I'm in the role that I am today.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you know, you can learn a lot. Kids will teach you a lot. It's a rewarding field. You don't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
I encourage you to at least explore that opportunity because you can really make a difference in a kid's life. And they're not looking for perfection. They're looking for someone that is just there, consistent, that is able to meet their needs, that listens to them, supports them, encourages mm-hmm. them.
So how do you, I'm going to back you up just a tiny bit. So you've got these grants, you've got the grant, you've got the people that are working through it. How does that work? Where are they going? What is it? Is it online? Is it in town? How is that working? I know it's different for every community, but I'm curious about how it's working in your community.
So, once we obtained, when we were recognized that we were going to obtain the grant money, we started establishing relationships with some of our colleges within the state of Minnesota.
Okay.
And I think we're up to five teacher partnerships with universities within Minnesota, and we have one in North Dakota that we've been able to partner with. And it is a combination of in-person, but mostly it is remote. You know, remote learning opportunities. They try to be as flexible as possible because a lot of our candidates are working, you know, full-time jobs, have families.
Right.
And so kind of some evening classes, some weekend classes. So it's a combination of all those factors. You know, it's one of the challenges that we have in the state of Minnesota is that we have very few universities that provide licensure in the area of deaf, of hard of hearing, and vision. Mm-hmm. So that's why we had to go outside of the state of Minnesota and join that partnership with North Dakota University. So we're, within the realm of future goals, I would love to be able to have conversations with the universities in regards to improving our deaf of hard of hearing programming within the state of Minnesota and vision programming so that we can get people that may be interested in that less obstacles to obtaining that license.
Right. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I'll tell you, for my own experience, I don't know yours. We haven't talked about that yet, but I went to school. I graduated at 17. I was one of the young ones. My mom needed me in kindergarten so that she could go back to work. She was a nurse, and then graduated at 17 and went to school for a year, quit for a year, went back part-time for a year, quit for another year, and then figured out once I was in my early 20s really what I wanted to do. And then, spent 5 years going straight through. And as a speech therapist, you have to have a master's degree. So, it was like, I'm not stopping once I got going. But before I went to my master's degree, I worked full time and went to school full time and graduated summa cum laude. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but when you know that you can get it, and I fought for my scholarships, I was in New York, so I fought for my scholarships but I was working full time and going to school full time. Now I didn't have kids and I was not married. So it was an opportunity, and I see God's hand in all of it. I was really blessed, and I'm intelligent. I'm not, school was never really hard for me, but it's hard work. It's still hard work no matter what you do. And so I graduated with my master's. I think I was 26 by the time I finished. And it was worth it. It was worth it. 24, maybe I was 25. I don't know. It's funny how you don't always remember 100%, but you can do it at 25. You can do it at 35. You can do it at 55. You can do it. I started this business at 50. So don't talk to me about age. Don't give us any excuses. You can do this. You can. And I've heard a lot of people say, I went back into education as a second career. Well, good for you. Do it. Absolutely. We need kid. Like you've said many times, John, we need you. We need you as an SLP. We need you as a teacher. We need you as a special ed teacher. It's critical. And that's why we're here. That's why Brighter Together exists, so that we can talk about how incredibly important the work is that's being done, because we are raising up the next generation, and it's a generation that needs us desperately.
Absolutely. Yeah. I really appreciate you saying that too, because I didn't get into education until I was 29 years old. Mm-hmm. I graduated college. My undergraduate was in criminal justice, and I started off in probation, community-based corrections work, and ultimately realized pretty quickly that the most positive outcomes you can have is on the front end, either being in the home with the parents, being a parent, or else being in the schools. And really wanted to be proactive in working with students so they didn't have outcomes of being incarcerated. Mm-hmm. And so I was very fortunate, worked in Nebraska, worked in Maine, worked in Texas, and then moved to Minnesota. And sometimes you choose your own path and sometimes it's chosen for you. I kind of just walked into a situation where there was an opportunity to go through a pipeline type program to obtain my licensure to become a teacher of the emotional and behavioral disordered. And mm-hmm. jumped on that, taught for 8 years, loved it, and then kind of kept trying to advance in my career up through administration. And so ultimately, I 100% agree with you. Age doesn't matter. No. Kids will respond to quality people that care about them. Yeah. And so if you care about kids, we need you.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And they know. They know. And I back to what you said earlier too, and I want to touch on that really quickly, is you take care of your people, and that shows too, because students know when they just know. They know when you're invested. They know when you want to be there. We as professionals will always try to leave our own stressors at the door. But no matter what, we're human. We're human beings. And when you're having a tough day, you know, it comes through. And if you don't feel supported in the environment that you're in, that makes it really hard to be that encouragement for those kids. So, you know, bringing up leaders and Lighthouse Therapy has, we have a group, and I'm going to plug the group real quick because I don't think I ever have. We have a group on LinkedIn, Special Education Leadership Development Group, and it is leaders in education, and we don't allow selling and we don't allow recruiting on there because we really want to mentor and support as many people that are doing the hard work in education as we can. And Brighter Together and this podcast has grown out of that. But even in my own company, every single therapist that works for us, and we're getting into sped teachers as well because we've recognized there's a huge need, and we're trying to, anything we can do to help schools, you know, to contract. And for us, it's not about the dollars and cents. It's about human beings. And when you support those people and you mentor them, everybody that comes to us gets a mentor. It doesn't matter if you've been a therapist or a teacher for 5 minutes or 50 years, you got to learn how that school wants it done and learn how we do things at Lighthouse. Mm-hmm. And that's not, anytime you do it, you change jobs, there's a learning curve that you have to go through. So we recognize that because we want our people to be ready to be in front of those kids, not because it can be isolating and it can be hard. Like you were talking about before, some of your programs, they felt isolated. And when you recognize that as a leader and invest in that. And a company that I worked for before, they had a mentoring program and they had me helping with it. And then they canceled it because it was too expensive. And it's like, nothing is too expensive when it comes to supporting your people. You just have to do it right. You just have to figure out a way that if it's too expensive, let's fix it. Let's find a way to make it better and easier for our therapists. But it's, people are never too expensive in my
You pay for it anyway.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, on the front end or the back end. And so ultimately, it is really important that you do invest in mentoring. And that, I'm glad that you brought that up. That is something that I'm very excited about for next year is we were able to add this year. We did some creative budgeting and added a special education instructional coach. Nice. And we're really fortunate. She happens to come to us with a lot of leadership experience. She was one of our former coordinators, real passionate about supporting all teachers, but particularly she's going to have a targeted caseload of those teachers that are coming in maybe without full special education licensure. They're working on it through programming.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Some of our teachers that are in that pipeline programming, because, you know, the job demands are challenging. The kid parts of it are probably the most rewarding, but there's some aspects that are super important, such mm-hmm. as due process paperwork, being able to, you know, the staff development aspects of the job, just learning your craft, the science of teaching, the art of teaching. And so she's going to be able to come in and provide us another layer of support, almost like a caseload of her own that
right.
she's going to
work right.
with. It's across our three districts and our cooperative. So she's going to have to, you know, code switch and switch to different districts and different approaches, but it's a real good starting point for us. And we're hoping to continue to grow how we do support our new teachers, all of our teachers, but particularly our new teachers. And so good starting point for us that I hope to see grow in the next 4 to 5 years to having more and more, you know, focused special ed instructional coaches.
Right. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah, it is so, it's so key. It's so key to, and you'll see it. You'll see it. Your teachers will see it. And again, it comes from the top and goes down, and those kids are the ones that win. And that's what we want. We want the kids to win. Well, John, gosh, 27 minutes has gone by in the blink of an eye. Tell people. Okay. Oh, wait, I want to ask you this question. I try to ask every sure. podcast attendee, and I don't want to miss it because you and I, like, we just have this special connection of Grand Island, Nebraska, right. and growing up there and living there and just, you know, we're in the plains in the Midwest and the stockyards and everything, you know,
just,
yeah. Grandma and grandpa had a farm, you know, 120 acre farm, dry land farming, if you can believe that, out there. So
was it near Grand Island?
Yeah. Yeah. St. Labore. In St. Labore. Yeah.
Yep, okay,
so, yeah. Yeah. So is your family still there?
So I have both my parents live. They moved from Grand Island to Shelton, Nebraska.
Oh, okay.
And they have a hobby farm and they're both still working like two full time jobs and,
wow.
and animals and very involved in the 4-H world and all that. I was going to say, it's funny. So you grew up near Grand Island. So, you know, Chapman.
Yeah.
So I went to middle school in Chapman, which is a real small community, but I was able to drive my daughter the other day by where I went to elementary school, which is Lockwood. I don't know if you remember Lockwood.
Oh, no, huh?
But it's a tiny two-room school.
Wow. Wow.
She was not impressed, but
I went to West Lawn. I was in West Lawn, oh. 5 points, right in 5 points in Grand Island. That's where, because I grew up in Grand Island. I was actually on Taylor Avenue.
Okay.
Three blocks from the high school. And we still drove as high schoolers. We still drove. And the crazy thing too is, oh my goodness, we're getting into, maybe they want to cut this out. Maybe they don't, who knows. But I went to Walnut for my middle school, and the year that my ninth grade year was the year they built Walnut on the street that was literally behind my house. And we had a 2 mile walk. My dad would drive us to school in the morning, and Grand Island, it gets cold in the winter, but we always had to walk home. Gosh, we walked to elementary school. Oh gosh, the things that we did. Then this is in the 70s, but, yeah. But I never got to go to that school because they built it the year after I was, you know, going into high school. That was the year that they opened the middle school. And so I never, brand new building, and I never got to go to it. And then they've added on to the high school since I went there. And I think your wife, even, you said your wife was a graduate from Grand Island.
She's an Islander. Yep.
Yeah. Grand Island Islanders out in the Midwest. Why are you Islanders in the Midwest? Well, there was a Grand Island and the Platte River and all that good stuff. Don't judge us. But anyway, so it was a beautiful place to grow up. It really was. It was a fun time.
Yeah. Very fond memories of Grand Island. And my two sisters still live there. They live in Lincoln. But yeah. Speaking of the Grand Island Northwest, their mascot too is a little out of place. The Vikings.
Yeah. Different worlds, different, but it still is. I mean, there's still the Islanders and still the Vikings, right? They're still the Vikings. Yeah. There you go. So okay, get back to my question. Sorry for the digress, everybody who doesn't know Grand Island. Now you know a little bit more than you probably wanted to know, but there it is. But I always try to ask, if you could change, now this is in the perfect world, and you cannot say money. Everybody wants more money. I know that. But if you could change one thing, miraculously fix one thing in your world, in what you do, whatever, and it would just be like that fixed, what would it be?
So one of the first things that comes to mind for me is just more opportunities for inclusion for all of our students, regardless of their disability. So meeting them where they're at with obviously their needs. Some of them have complex needs, but ultimately I think the more opportunities for those students to be included in all aspects of schooling would be extremely exciting for me. And I know that that's something that parents thrive for as well. And the students themselves, some of them maybe have anxiety about being included in those opportunities, but giving them the confidence and courage to push themselves to be able to have all those experiences that all students in high school have.
Wow.
But
yeah,
recognizing that they do need some support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And kids are, these kids are getting opportunities that, you know, we didn't even think about 20, 30 years ago.
Certainly.
It's like, it's amazing. It's just, and kudos to your university partners and to your business partners, the people that are making things happen in your community, because it takes a village. It really does take a village.
It certainly does.
So,
it certainly does.
So tell everybody where they should go to learn more about John Weekly and about Sherborne Northern Right Special Education Cooperative.
Absolutely. Actually, if you were just happen to Google Sherborne Northern Right Sherborne Northern Right Special Education Cooperative, that should bring you to our website. I certainly could also share with you some links that would probably expedite that. I just don't happen to have them in front of me.
That's okay.
Right.
That's all right. Yeah. And Sherborne is Sherburne, correct?
Correct.
Sherborne Northern Right is WRIGHT. And it's if you do SEC, Special Education Cooperative. We love our acronyms in education, don't we? We really do.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. Well, fantastic. John, it would be an excellent, if you're looking for some ways to help your district and what's happening. I know he's a good man and has a huge heart. It's been very evident, and we're so pleased to have you on this show, John. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate your opportunity to showcase our programs and just to kind of catch up on one of my favorite cities, Grand Island, Nebraska.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks again for being on Brighter Together podcast, because we really are brighter together.